Welcome back to Feelings and F-Bombs. I'm Madeline.
I'm Alexis.
And today's episode, we roller coastered again. We deviated, we side quested, we did all the things, but that's the beauty because it's our podcast and no one else's. And we're just doing this really for the five followers out there. Right. So hopefully you don't have harsh opinions about this. But in today's episode, I mean, we talk about libido,
anxiety and depression.
Yeah. And then we end it with the big question.
Is love real?
So we'll let you guys determine if it's real based on our conversation. Hopefully you think it is. Hopefully you don't think there is no love in the world. We're all doomed.
Super depressed. Yeah. That's why we talk about anxiety and depression, because love isn't real and we're all fucked.
Oh my God. Stay tuned for more. But yeah, we hope you enjoy this and we'll see you in 2 seconds. Where do we want to start? Why do I have this on here?
What?
How do you brush your teeth? I don't know why.
How do you brush your teeth?
I know. That's why I'm like, why did I put
this on?
Did you
just really want the visual?
That was it. It was just for the trick. Well, I don't know. Maybe just tell me how you brush your teeth and it'll come to me. Is that okay. How you do it?
Yeah, I just really, and I do the neck bob too.
Oh,
and,
you know, good.
Really,
yeah.
Get in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, so I know one thing I do that's weird when I brush my teeth is I like don't put water on my toothbrush before my toothpaste.
This was my question.
It was?
You freak. Yes. Keep going.
I actually don't use water.
What?
I know.
Lexi.
That honestly is probably like unhygienic because I just will rinse my toothbrush after, put it in there. Straight into my mouth with the toothpaste. I know. And I have been called out for being disgusting.
A freak of nature.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, listen to my reasoning.
Okay.
I don't like how foamy it gets when there's so much water. I feel like whenever the toothpaste mix with my spit, it brushes around the toothpaste the proper amount. But whenever it mixes with the water and my spit, it's just foamy. I don't, like, all the toothpaste is everywhere. It's coming out of my mouth. Like, I can't, like, get it on all my teeth. That's how I feel. Like, I understand it's gross.
Okay.
I will forever do this.
Okay.
I don't care.
Okay. I hear you, though, on, and that makes sense about, like, not wanting it to be too foamy. And really, the whole bubble thing with any type of soap dispenser. Sure.
Roscoe.
I know.
How many
I can't
weeks is he gonna
focus? Bubbles yes. are a whole thing. Whenever something suds up, foams up, we associate that with cleanliness. But really, like, laundry detergents and stuff, like, they shouldn't be super super sudsy. Like, that actually doesn't mean it's clean or less clean. And I've heard, I don't actually know the research on this, but I've heard that some companies, like soap cleaning companies, will put specific things just to make it suds up, just so it, like, gives you the illusion that this thing is really, really clean. So, yeah, suds do not mean cleanliness. However, not putting water on your toothbrush is wild.
Why?
I don't know. I guess I have the same texture aversion as you, but the opposite. Whereas, like, whenever it's just the dry ass paste
gritty
in my mouth, and I feel like I'm just like brushing sandpaper essentially, because I can just like feel all the little granules, and I'm like, no, get this shit off. Like, it's whenever you go to the dentist and you know they do like the cleaner stuff, and then you kind of you know, and you like feel a little. That's how I feel with no water. So I literally wet my brush, put the toothpaste on, wet it again, and then I go in.
Oh, I think that would, no.
What just happened?
Oh, you know what else I left in to the last episode? Your crazy weird burp.
Yeah.
And I honestly was going to take it out, but then I later burp and I go, that's how you burp. And I thought it was so funny and stupid.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I know. Like, it was so dumb. But see, that's why, like, having an editor would be so hard is because they don't know what's funny.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know.
Clearly, they don't have comedy. A sense of humor. We are comedians.
Yes. This episode's starting off really weird.
No, it's going great. Okay, I do want to talk about libido.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay. How would you say, like, your libido has shifted or has it shifted at all? I don't know, just, like, in your life.
Oh.
And where would you say your libido's at now?
Right now, my libido's really high.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm in a new relationship. Mm-hmm. So we are, what, steamy? We are bunnies. But it has totally depended on my stress level in the past, my birth control, my age, my health, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, it really, I have a lot, like a range. It's been from, I think on episode 2, I joked about having a masturbation marathon.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I thought I was, like, addicted to sex.
Yes.
Well, I wasn't having sex. I was...
But just, like, addicted to that sensation.
Yes.
Yeah.
All the way to, like, probably when I was 21 or 22, I was on the NuvaRing. And that one just, like, killed my libido. And I remember having, a conversation with my partner at the time. And he was like, do you not find me attractive? Like, what is it? It was at that point where, like, you don't even want them to come near you or touch you.
Yeah.
Because if it, like, you don't want anything to be initiated because it's just, like, almost a chore is what it felt like. So I've had literally everything from, like, super high sex drive to super low sex drive to everything in the middle. I think for a woman, I have a high sex drive.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Because even with my past relationship, I feel like I was initiating, like, whenever I was level. And I guess what I mean by level is, like, I'm not angry at that person. I'm feeling loved and protected. I'm feeling not super stressed. Whenever all of those things come together, my sex drive is there.
Yeah.
But if those things aren't together, I feel like that plays such a big role in it.
Yeah.
But why do you ask?
I feel like I've just been seeing a lot more conversation about, like, female libido specifically. And I still don't think it's just talked about enough. Like, I still think that it is such an eighth wonder of the world for people that do not experience a female libido. And because there are so many factors that go into it. And I think because of the factors that go into determining our libido, that's what then, like, puts this stigma or this stereotype on. Well, like, oh, it's just everything has to be perfect. And, like, everything has to be your way. And why are you so sensitive? It's like, God forbid. I just want to feel fucking loved and appreciated. And I'm sorry that that gets my rocks off. But it does, you know? Or even just, like, stress. Like, sure, stress from work. But even just, like, stress in your home, you know? Like, your home not being clean. Or even just, like, maybe you're just not, like, happy with the way that your home looks. It could even be just dishes, you know? And it's just, like, the stereotype that it's, like, it's a switch, you know? Like, it's something that can just be, like, turned on. And none of these other factors really matter, you know? I mean, I think it's just, like, why do we not think that emotions would have anything to do with libido whenever we think about, like, if you're super, super sad or super, super angry? Typically, you're not wanting to mess around. But also, some people use sex as an unhealthy coping skill. So that's where... That's different, you know, like, I'm talking specifically about, like, libido, your drive, not your motive for doing it. Because I feel like motive to have sex and desire to have sex are different.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it makes sense in my head.
I think it does.
And maybe that'll connect with someone else out there. But yeah, mine's just been, like, up and down, all over the place. Even whenever I was going through just normal development as a kid, I still felt like it was very... up, down, up, down. And lo and behold, did I have emotions back then? Absolutely, I did. So, of course, it was up, down, up, down. But because it just wasn't talked about enough back then, I felt like there was something wrong with me because I would also go through, like, the masturbation marathons. And then all of a sudden, I just, like, wouldn't want,
like,
anything to do with that. Yeah. For a while. And, you know, obviously, there were some other things going on, like, mental health-wise that I just... was not aware of or didn't even think that it would be, like, mental health related. And so I would think, like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with my body. Something's wrong with me. And why am I not able to do this thing? And this even happened to me, like, in college at one point. And I was like, I just have no desire to go and do these things, you know? So I don't know if there's a such thing as, like, what a normal libido is, because something that goes into libido is satisfaction. And like some people can go without having sex for months and that's fine. Like that fills their cup up. They fill their cup up in other ways, or it's just like not a high priority item for them. And then for other people, they're like, no, like I gotta get it out, get it in at least like once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And like whenever you're in a new relationship, like that's fun. That's exciting. I don't know. I'm sure there's research out there, but just my assumption is that you're probably typically having sex more whenever you're in a new relationship. But at least for me, I've just never been like a sex all the time kind of person. Just always in like the honeymoon phase is nice. And I've told most of my like adult partners, like, hey, just so you know, like we're probably going to be doing it quite a bit in the beginning, but just know, like, I'm normally not like this. Like, yeah. I'm the person that can go a month without having sex, and that's fine. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I don't get that urge to be like, oh my gosh, like, I really need to go do that. Like, I need to go find someone. I need to go do this thing. Because also I just had a vibrator. So
yeah,
then I'd be fine.
That is like a different question. I would say almost a different topic of like getting off versus sex as an emotional connection are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like some people genuinely never feel like they really need to get off.
Mm.
And then for some people, it's that emotional connection piece that they struggle with.
Yeah.
So I feel like it could be, and it could be both, right?
Yeah.
But like, I wonder, at least in my perspective,
mm-hmm.
I can get off even if there's like more emotions. Now I've mm-hmm. been like depressed. So yeah. And when you're in like that state, getting off, at least for me, wasn't really like on the list of priorities. Yeah. Like I was just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think whenever I'm just sad or something, like I'm having mm-hmm. a rough like go for a bit, I can still get off, but like the emotional connection might be harder for me
mm-hmm.
of like doing it with a partner.
Yeah.
So I wonder too, like if that plays into it for some people. And I think especially women, like
mm-hmm.
we do, we like will come home and if things aren't clean, we're having a stressful day and like we have 14 things on the to-do list before 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last thing I want is for some guy to be coming up on me, touching me. I'm like, get off, mm-hmm. like help me. You know, yeah. I got things to do.
Yeah. Do you not see the way this house looks?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think like, at least for me, if people know their love languages, if not, there's free tests out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, like physical touch, at least in the past, weirdly enough, was like really low.
Mm.
Now I think it's much higher now, which is very strange that it like flipped.
Yeah.
But I don't want physical touch if I feel like other things are being abandoned.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. And also, you got me wondering, and I guess this is just like me processing like my own
that's what this stuff is out loud.
Because I've never been one to just like really yearn for sex all the time. You mm-hmm. know, like once a month, cool, that's fine. And sorry for any people out there that are the total opposite. They're probably like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I think there's a lot of people who like, I think there's such a huge spectrum. Like,
yeah,
there's oh, people. Yeah. Like you, there's people who want less, people who want more. Like, there's such a spectrum.
Oh, yeah, such a spectrum. But I do wonder, because in, I was about to say, in all my successful relationships, but then I was like, I think this is my only successful.
Which is normal.
Which makes sense, yeah. Because it's the person that I married. But, like, it's something that doesn't, like, loom or hang over. Like, it's not this deep, dark cloud of this thing. And, again, if you're an in-law or my parent, I already told you the rules. So like I'll do it more than once a month, like to make sure that I'm still meeting my partner's satisfaction too, but I'm not like doing it for him. It's because I feel so cared and loved for. And because I am already getting so much fulfilled in me emotionally, then I'm okay with being a little bit fulfilled in other ways.
In physical ways.
In physical ways. My point was that I wonder if for me it's just like never been a big thing, because I always make sure, not make sure, but I focus more on like the emotional part for me. Or I guess that's just something like of my love language. Like physical affection just isn't like super, super high on the list for me. Like I love to hold hands in public. Like I like to hug. I love to kiss, but I'm not like a make out. Like I'm not a cuddler, a big cuddler at night or even like on the couch or anything. Cause I'm like, I like proximity, like being near you, holding your hand. Like that's fine.
You want someone like in your space all the time. Like,
yeah. I don't need that. And I like quality time, like deep conversation. And
yeah.
We've just talked about that too. But yeah, I guess that's all that to say. All that wrapped in a bow of libido. Still a mystery.
On the same topic of libido, though, like, I think that for some people, it's a spectrum. You can feel hornier or not hornier mm-hmm. based on, like, just your libido. But I do think, like, your partner has a lot to do with it. Like, mm-hmm. I can only really compare these two things. But, like, in my last relationship, my libido would drop a lot whenever, like, he was stressing me out or I didn't mm-hmm. feel like he was present mm-hmm. or I didn't feel like he was, like, loving me in the way that I needed.
Yeah.
And then kind of like how you said, like, you are more, like, interested in, like, the physical intimacy whenever you feel loved and fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I think it's, like, it happens the opposite, too. Like, if there's a partner that's not doing things to help you, even if you have a high, high, high sex drive, mm-hmm. like, you might be like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I, you know, like, do this? And I've experienced that. And I don't know. I think that that's normal. And I think it's, like, not anything wrong with you. I think that's how we're wired. We are wired to kind of seek that, like, love and safety first, mm-hmm. and then the physical intimacy a second. And mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about this, but it seems from what I hear when I speak with men about this, that they don't need, like, love and safety for intimacy to be mm-hmm. a thing. They're like, I can fuck and then I can like, not necessarily peace out, but, like, it's yeah. not like this. It doesn't have to be as connected mm-hmm. is what it seems like, which yeah. is so crazy. Could not imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe nice in some ways, but also mm-hmm. empty.
Yeah, it really is an interesting anomaly. And it really does also seem like it's typically males. I mean, I have met females that do the same thing. And I've never, like, asked a guy, like, why are you able to do that? Because I've just never been, like, close enough with a guy to be like, hey, like, how are you just, that's kosher with you.
Yeah.
But I do have a friend who is very much like that, can just go, it doesn't even have to be a date, can literally just be a hookup, goes, hooks up, leaves. And for her, it was much more of, like, I don't want to get attached type of situation. And it was just purely for the pleasure of it. Yeah. Like, there was just no emotion tied to it for her. She was like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Like, this is my mission. This is what I want. This is what I'm going to go get. And then that's that. And I don't have to talk to them again. Because for her, she was like, we both knew that that's all that it was.
Yeah.
But I do think some people too, and I've seen this with, like, girls and guys, where they will go and they'll say, like, oh, like, this is just, you know, one time thing, but they don't really want it to be, like, they actually do want an emotional connection out of it. And then that's hard. Like, if you're one of those people where you're trying to fake the funk and you know that you need emotional connection, don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
Don't do that to yourself.
Like, that's
awful.
Would be me. Like, I would be yeah. that crazy girl that gets attached. I'm like, why aren't we still talking? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't. I personally know I couldn't because mm-hmm. I need, which we talked about this in one of our podcasts, like, I need depth, like, in yeah. a relationship. So mm-hmm. without that, the physical intimacy would be mm-hmm. just weird. Like, and I say that I hooked up with my boyfriend now, my now boyfriend,
uh-huh.
like, date 4, but there was an emotional connection.
Yeah.
Even though it was still very, very new. Like, it
right.
was, so, I don't know.
Y'all already have depth, but, like, y'all had depth
yeah.
by first, second, third, fourth date.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually was pretty close with a group of guys who were really, really shitty when it mm. came to women, and they were mm-hmm. like friends of someone else that I knew, so I was around all the time, and I really got to see, like, an inside perspective of, like, this genre
mm.
of the male species, and I actually lost
what a specimen.
Yeah, I lost, like, a lot of hope because of that,
mm.
and I kind of lost this, like, feeling that men liked women. Like, I really was like, ugh. Men, like, in my mind, they don't even like women. Like, we're just meat. We are just objects. They genuinely, like, are so simultaneously obsessed with us, right? But also yeah. view us as absolutely worthless.
Mm.
Like, somehow both of those coexisted at the same time in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because anytime I was around these people, it would just get validated by how mm. they spoke, how they approached women, what they did if they got rejected or if they went home with them. Like, either
yeah.
way, it didn't matter. There was going to be something said that was disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so disheartening. Mm-hmm. I really, truly started believing, like, men
yeah.
hate women. This is how it's going to be forever. And now I'm actually, like, flipping it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm opening my mind to this wild concept that there's
that
actually,
men can love women.
Yes. Like for as people,
yeah.
Not as bodies.
Right.
Not as bed warmers, like as genuine people. And I remember like talking with my boyfriend about this many times because I'm like processing this with him now. Poor guy.
Yeah.
He's being such a trooper.
Not a poor guy. Like what a guy.
No, I mean poor guy because I'm constantly sitting there being like, men suck. And he's like, do men suck? Like,
what a guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he can see that men can suck and men can also be great.
That's true.
Because at least he's not like, you really want to see how men suck?
No.
Let me show you.
Oh, God. No, he's being great. And I remember sitting there and I made a comment about like, it's crazy because I feel like you treat me like a human. Like, no, really. I said that to him.
Gosh.
And he was like, of course I do. Like what? But I'm like, no, you treat me like I have my own life. Like I am my own character in my own life. Like that was... I know that's wild, but like,
it's kind of sad.
Super blah, blah, blah. Super sad. Yeah, it is sad because I genuinely like thought whenever it came to like a male to female relationship, the male was always going to be like prioritize himself. Like you almost had to cater because that was sort of, I don't even want to say how I was raised. I did see some relationships like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then also I think like the patterns of my last relationship kind of like went into that and then would get validated by the people that I was around and like all of these things. And yeah, I just remember like getting in this new relationship. I made a joke to him, like, you're like one of five guys on the planet. So like, I'm not letting you go. And then I hung out with his friends and they all genuinely like cared about their wives and like were active fathers and like not the kind of people who thought of women as balls and chains, like locking them down, like genuinely wanted to make their wives happy. And it floored me.
Yeah.
So now I'm like really having to open my mind to this concept that someone can be there for you because they really love you. Not because there's some motive behind it or they're getting anything out of that relationship. Like,
yeah.
And obviously all love is conditional. I think that the concept of unconditional love maybe sets people up for hurt.
Oh, that's a whole thing.
Yeah. We'll revisit that topic.
That's we'll put it on the docket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So love is conditional. Obviously you need to get something out of a relationship for it to work, but I feel like it doesn't have to be like 100% transactional just because it's conditional.
Right. Yeah.
And
yes.
I have recognized that so much lately. And I actually just had a conversation with my boyfriend. I'm wearing his shirt. I'm obsessed with him. Okay. All I do is talk about him on the show.
Why are you so obsessed with me?
I was listening to that song earlier.
Of course you were.
Like it came on my Spotify playlist and I was like, I forgot the song existed. No, but he was like challenging my thought process on that. I made a comment about how I saw this video and I've also seen it in other people's lives where like if a woman is financially dependent on her husband, divorce lawyers are like, don't do that. Like that's a horrible thing to do because they have seen countless scenarios where like a man will cheat or leave. And the woman who doesn't have a job or like any financial resources, I guess, is kind of screwed.
Yeah.
But then there's also that, like, they don't have to be a total shit. They also could get hurt or, you know, like, pass away or something. Like, something could happen to that man, so you need to make sure you're protected. Well, I kind of brought that up to my boyfriend, and he was a little bit offended. Like, you think that I would, like, leave you or, like, cheat on you or whatever? And I'm like, well, I'm not saying that, but, like, just to be protected. And we just got into, like, this big conversation about how basically it all boiled down to, like, I don't fucking trust someone to like support me like that. And I do think that it's good to like do your due diligence, look out for yourself. But it was coming from a place of fear because everything that I've done up to this point is like protect yourself, protect yourself, protect yourself. Like make sure that you have your own back because I genuinely don't feel like my romantic partners in the past have. Like after we had this conversation, I sort of like really went into myself and like my thought. And I was really thinking about this. And is this the truth that like men are like this and male partners aren't always going to basically like they're going to let you down is kind of like my thought. I'm trying to like verbalize this like deep internal digging I was doing. But I ended up trying, like actively trying to see signs that what I thought is not true. That men are bad in general, basically.
Yeah.
And because I was like looking for that, I ended up seeing like these men at my work making platonic relationship women, just like women on their team, plates mm-hmm. from the potluck because they knew they were in a meeting. Like, so thoughtful.
Yeah.
And all of the things that my boyfriend does, and like men in general being kind and thoughtful. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, maybe the world is not all dark and grim and sad. And like, right. I actually maybe was having that thing that your brain does where it like validates.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I'll even see on social media all mm-hmm. the times that like their husbands aren't keeping up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I want to switch that narrative. Like, yeah. I hate that now.
Yep.
Is that probably still the truth for like countless women? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I want to start looking for the good because
yeah.
now that I have a man that I'm like, I genuinely believe he is good. Mm-hmm. I don't want to keep perpetuating this
yeah.
and eventually making it a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's so hard for us. One, if you're like living in that space where your partner just isn't the best or you just like your dynamic's not great, to then not see that everywhere or hyper-focus on the opposite and then resent your partner more for it. And like social media is the worst place for that, but it goes both ways. And that's also like to your point too of having this like bias that like all men are terrible and my brain is only going to see all of the things that men are doing terribly. Like that's what keeps our implicit bias. And until kind of like what you said, where you're just like, I'm sick of it, because now that you do have an amazing boyfriend, you do know that there are amazing men out there. And then not only that, but he has a group of amazing men as well. So it's like, okay, this is not just a coincidence at this point. Like these are active choices that these people are making, which it's a choice, right? It really takes you to that point of having to say like, no, I'm sick of this. I'm going to start seeking out and like looking for these things that mm-hmm. like there are good men. And honestly, like hot tip for dating too, like think about, oh my, I literally did this before I started dating my husband. I made a list of the qualities that I wanted in a person. Mm-hmm. Realistic though, but also the kind of partner that I wanted to be too. And I think that's like the difference too, because in my relationship before the relationship with my husband, the relationship was just so toxic. I literally turned into someone that I did not like. Yeah. Like, I don't even know who that person was. So I made sure that I made a list of not only the person that I wanted to, you know, in a partner, the qualities that I wanted in a partner, but then how I wanted that to benefit me as well. Because you should grow in a partnership, yeah. right? And that really helped my perspective as I wasn't even like planning on going into the dating scene at that point. But it was whenever I made that list, like shortly after I then met my husband.
Yeah.
And something that I think is sad, because I think age has a lot to do with just like, you know, how you move and react in a relationship and also like what relationships have been modeled to you. But what I think is so sad is whenever you start to see people who are our age, and we're like, we're both almost 30 years old, and we just see them not growing. Like, even just the way that they maybe talk about their partner or talk about mm-hmm. their relationship, because I think there's a difference of like just talking about like a hard time in your relationship versus just like fully saying that your partner is an awful human being. That's very different. And so I just think it's so sad that whenever we do see people our age that are still just thinking that that's going to work, and maybe it does, in their mind it is working for them, but whenever you just continuously get the same results or find yourself in the same scenarios, it's like, okay, maybe I am adding to this, like, and it's hard because I don't want to like victim blame and say that the other person involved had nothing to do with it. But if we want to see actual change, we're going to have to make changes and get really uncomfortable too. So what's anxiety like for you? Does it dictate your life?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think it does. Actually, I've been like considering getting on anti-anxiety medicine because ever since my best friend, our friend,
mm-hmm.
got on it, she's like chill, like so chill about things. Ooh. I almost don't think you should be chill about. Oh,
sorry.
But she's like living such a wonderful, peaceful existence, even though her life is exploding. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what is that like? Like to not have horrible, intrusive thoughts. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is like a big thing for me. But why do you ask? Is it big for you?
So it used to be like huge for me whenever I just didn't have a good like handle on it. But now, you know, I've got a good grip. But something that is just like a double whammy for me, I have ADHD. So time management for me is extremely hard. And that's not to say that everyone with ADHD has, you know, bad time management, because I have good time management. But I think I just have to like really, 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 really be intentional about it. Or I do the thing where I'm very unrealistic with my time, where I'm like, oh, I have 5 minutes. Oh yeah, like I can totally get fully ready to go to work in 5 minutes, you know? So this was one of those times where I work from home mostly, but then I go in office to see clients for the most part. And so this is one of those times where I was working and I was like, okay, like I know at this time, like I have to get off of the laptop, go pack myself a snack, get my work bag ready, fill my water up, and, you know, head out. And in my mind, I'm like, that's going to take me like 3 minutes, you know? So like, okay, so my time got there that I needed to get up from my laptop and go do my things. But I'm like, that's only, I don't have to do that much, whatever. So I keep going. I'm like, okay, I can work for like 4 more minutes, 5 more minutes. That turns into 15 more minutes. And now I'm like, fuck, I really need to go. So of course, getting my work bag together does not take just 2 seconds, because I have to make sure that I get certain things from my purse into there, and then get my laptop and pack that up and unplug this thing and get my notepad and find my pen, all this stuff. So then I am like, oh my gosh, I am going to get there like right at the time that the appointment starts. And I cannot stand that. Like whenever I was fully in office, I would always show up to the office 30 minutes before my first session, or like before the business opened up essentially. And that was just so I had time to just like chill out, start my laptop up, kind of prep for my first session at 9, hang out with some of my coworkers, talk to them, you know, like it was nice. I got to regulate, do things on my own pace. And so I'm still like that. I like to get to the office about like an hour to 30 minutes before my session starts. And so anyways, at this point I'm getting there right on time. And I don't know if, I'm sure this is like other therapists out there too, but I wouldn't say it's a fear, but something that I don't love the idea of is like walking into the office with my client. Cause I just feel like that's very much like, oh, like you just got here.
Yeah.
And like you're not ready. Right. And even that's the anxiety, right? Like that's that critical thought from the anxiety happening. I'm sure they would not think that at all. They'd probably think, oh, this is a person with a life. And
but see, are you supposed to have a life as a therapist?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yes, you are. I think doctors are supposed to have lives.
No, you are.
Yeah.
As a patient, I don't want to know that you have a life. I want you to care about my life.
Hmm.
I'm paying you to care about my life.
Okay.
For an hour.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. No, I believe it. And I do believe that other people feel that way too.
Like you 100% as a human being.
Yeah.
Should have a life. If you like canceled an appointment, like I get it.
Yeah.
But in that hour that we're sitting down, that I'm being charged.
Yeah.
My life is priority. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Is that rude?
No, I think that's good, because then I would imagine too that you're like probably good at advocating for yourself whenever you're in some of those spaces. But I think on the flip of that, if I thought that about every single person, that's so much pressure.
Yeah.
To then feel like I have to be perfect all the time, and I just can't be in that mindset. That might work for some people to think that, but for me, like it can happen quick and fast. And so kind of just like with this thing that I already don't like the idea of walking in with the client, because then I'm going straight to critical thought. Yeah. It took me such a long time to think, oh no, they know I'm human and they know that I make mistakes too. And I also address that in my sessions too. Like I'm pretty transparent up front that I am not the expert. You are the expert of your own life. I am here to help you work through any challenges or issues that you're facing. And I'm here to be along for the ride. But you are leading this thing, and I'm just here to help you along the way. And even like if I need them to say something again in session, I say that. If I, you know, am hungry and not focused, or if I haven't eaten, I address that at the beginning of session, just because I think that helps bring the human into it. However, I do think it is like different than a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. I don't know what makes it different. I think maybe it's just stereotypes. But anyways, okay, so all that to say, right? I am now getting there at like pulling into the parking lot at the time that the session starts. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. So I look around. I don't see my client. So I scurry into the building, and our office is on the second floor. So I like take the stairs and I go into the back door, like where staff always goes in. And I get there and I pull up my EHR calendar, and their appointment is not until the next hour.
Oh my God.
So I had so much time to prep.
That's great.
I got to relax for a little bit. So I walked to the bathroom, I got water, I responded to a couple emails, prepped for my session. It was good to go. But the whole time I was just a ball of anxiety.
Yeah.
And I also don't like driving on highways. It just freaks me out. Traffic freaks me out. I'm not a fan. That's already an anxiety that I have most of the time whenever I get into a car. But then with the added anxiety of being late and like, I don't want to speed because I don't want to get into a wreck. And then that, what's the point? If I get into a wreck, then I'm really not going to be at the session.
True.
So there's no point.
When something like that happens to me,
The
added anxiety is like the reverberations. I don't know if that's the right word, but like I'm still anxious even after I realize. Like I have to like regulate my nervous system.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like do some deep breathing or like, like literally move my body to like get out of that, because I'll still feel like so like, like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Yeah.
Even though my brain is like, oh, you have so much time.
Oh yeah. It makes total sense, because our body calms our brain better than our brain calms our body. So never in the, and this is a quote, I can't remember from who, but never in the history of being able to calm down has anyone been able to calm down by being told to calm down. Typically, you have to take a walk. You have to drink some water. You just have to take some deep breaths or just be alone. That way you can process whatever the fuck just happened to then get your bearings. So it's like whenever I got there, the first thing that I did was take a walk to the bathroom. I didn't have to go to the bathroom, but I knew that my body needed that to help regulate me in that moment. I needed to drink some water. And it's so funny that naturally as humans, whenever we see someone like panicked or just like not well, we tend to offer them water.
Mm.
And it's actually, so it's not necessarily the water that helps regulate us. It's the tension that our throat does. Oh. So our throat opens and closes whenever we swallow something, and that muscle tension, that flex, release, helps our nervous system calm down and helps get us regulated. So it's really cool. Like as humans, we do so many things innately, like not really understanding the reason why we do it, but it's typically to help regulate us or to keep us safe. Same with like survival strategies, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. We do those because we're doing whatever we need to help either help us feel physically safe or help us feel emotionally safe. That's called felt safety. But then if you've experienced trauma, your body remembers that trauma, and your body remembers what it had to do in those traumatic moments to keep yourself safe. So that's why sometimes we can now see an inappropriate response to something that isn't quote unquote deemed as traumatic. It's like hypervigilance. You know, it's like the person that jumps at everything, you know, just be like a door closing. That doesn't always mean that that person experienced trauma.
See, but I was thinking it was like if someone's like laughing at a funeral, it's not quite the same.
So we use laughter to also regulate our bodies. I mean, yeah, just like laughing at inappropriate times. It can be like our brain just trying to make sense of something whenever it's so overwhelming.
I was going to say something so off topic with the laughing. I started realizing, now that I'm like going to the gym a little bit more, if I'm in like, not extreme, that's so dramatic, but if I'm in like a good amount of pain from working out or like like really struggling to lift the weight, I start laughing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm not just like hee hee hee. I'm like, ha ha, like mm-hmm. I'm cracking up and I'm like, this fucking sucks, like laughing.
Yeah.
And I don't know normally if I'm like doing something that heavy. That heavy also is like literally 10 pounds on the fucking bar. Okay, maybe a little more. Yeah. I actually can't remember, but it probably literally is the bar and 10 pounds. But yeah. To me, that's really heavy right now. But yeah, I started like crazy laughing and I like have been noticing I'm doing that. And I didn't know, like, I don't think I have any trauma related to that. When you said like inappropriate responses, I was like, that reminded me of that for some reason.
Yeah. So I'll go back to that because not necessarily inappropriate, but unmatched to the situation.
Okay.
So someone having a response that from the outside perspective does not seem like it's matched for whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
Having an inappropriate response like laughing or even kind of just like crying sometimes too is just also a way that our body is regulating us in that moment. It's helping keep us calm in some sense.
Yeah.
Like even like crying's not bad and crying helps us release that feeling or just even process it. It helps us know that like whatever's happening is real.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all regulation. I'm also the same way. Like whenever I'm in extreme pain, I am laughing my ass off.
So weird.
Yeah. Like I used to have seizures at one point. And like whenever sometimes I would come out of the seizure, like my body would just like hurt really, really bad. And I would just start laughing.
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of like, I can't even imagine what that probably looks like.
You're seizing to just be like, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
You're like, are you okay? Like,
yeah. Or just so much shit. Like whenever I cheer, just injuring my body all the time.
And
just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. But you're laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pretty normal. Like it's actually not super abnormal as people think.
Huh. Something I noticed whenever I was like processing some, like a big relationship thing I had with a family member, is I would be thinking about a therapy session I was going to.
Okay.
And walking around my house talking to myself as if I'm talking to the therapist.
Okay.
Like trying to explain it. Like, but what I was doing was processing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I told her this and she was like, oh yeah, like that makes a lot of sense because you're moving. So your body is like processing that way. And then you're also like verbalizing, saying your truth, like storytelling, like putting all these things into like into words that you're feeling. And she was like, yeah, I think that's really healthy for you to do.
Yeah.
So, but I look batshit crazy. I know I do because I'm walking around my house talking to an imaginary friend. Like, I'm sure it looks wild, but I still will do it if I'm, and I actually notice I'll do it kind of sometimes. Like if I'm on a walk with my dogs, I'll be like really in my head, like processing something. And I'll sometimes say something out loud and I'll be like, oh God. I look crazy. I look so strange right now.
Yeah. But dude, I do that in my house all the time. All the time where I'll just get like deep into thought about something or I'll be like just rethinking a scenario.
Yes.
And then I start to hear myself talking. I'm like, okay, we got to reel it back.
Yeah.
We got to reel it back. But no, actually you need to keep going because it is. It's helpful. You're helping yourself process the situation, make sense of the situation. Or what I like to say whenever I'm reliving a scenario and how I would do it, I'm just learning from my experience.
Yeah.
And if I'm ever in that situation again, I know how I would react in a way that I was proud of.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I heard this from someone and I thought like it just kind of explained the two really well, or at least like made sense to me in my head with like depression and anxiety. And I've experienced both. I don't know who hasn't at this point, but people who are suffering from depression tend to dwell on the past, and people who have symptoms of anxiety tend to think about the future. And like they're stressing about the future. And I thought that was really interesting. And I reflected back to like times where I was super, super depressed. And I was like, yeah, all I was thinking was like all these just like very shameful things. And like that's what I was depressed about. And just like, why would I do that? I wish I could do this over again. I wish I could take these things back. I wish I didn't make these decisions. And then times whenever I've experienced like extreme anxiety, I'm just stressing about how am I going to get to this next point in my life? I feel like I need to be at this step and I'm only at this step and, you know, just And so I just,
what if, I feel like what if things like bad what ifs could be anxiety too, which yes. is all in the future. Mm-hmm. What if this thing in the future happens?
Yes, exactly.
I also saw this thing that was like anxiety versus intuition, how to know which one's which. Mm. And it said anxiety speaks in questions, intuition speaks in statements. And I thought that was interesting because my anxiety is always like the what if, what if, what if.
Yeah.
But your intuition would be like this thing, period.
Yeah. Wow. So once again, never a dull moment on this roller coaster of yeah. our podcast.
We just don't know where we're going to end up.
Yeah. And honestly, I love that for us.
Yeah.
Love that we have free will. We have a docket, but I love that we like allow ourselves to deviate, and baby, do we deviate.
Do we deviate.
So thank y'all for deviating with us. I'm Madeline.
I'm Alexis.
And this is Feelings and F-Bombs. We hope to see you next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.